Welcome to A Kenyan's Experience, a podcast for Kenyans by Kenyans. In this podcast, we use real, raw, and personal journeys to provide you with the knowledge and the power to demystify, simplify, and make better decisions about your academic and professional future. They say experience is the best teacher. Well, here you'll hear about the experiences of Kenyan nationals who've navigated the academic and professional worlds both locally in Kenya and in the diaspora. This podcast is relevant for everyone at any point in their academic or career path, from high schoolers to university students to industry professionals, and even those looking to pivot later in their careers. Here at A Kenyan's Experience, we ask the questions you wish you had answers to before you started your academic or professional journey, before you made that life-changing big decision. And we normalize making bold decisions for you. So tune in for a once-weekly episode that will leave you inspired, challenged, and laughing as Kenyans tell their stories here on A Kenyan's Experience.
Hello, hello. Hey, guys. Welcome back to A Kenyan's Experience. We are here for part two of Meet Our Siblings. So I'm joined by Cynthia. Cynthia, say hi.
What's up, guys? Excited for part two.
Yeah, this part is a bit more serious. and so for our siblings, Jin and Omboy, say hi to the people.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, guys.
Welcome back. How are you guys feeling?
I'm a bit nervous, aren't I? Yeah.
Don't be nervous. We're friends
Gini,
here.
We're here.
Safe space.
Exactly. Literally with the siblings.
Yeah.
All right. So in this part, we are going to talk about your uni experience, cover sort of what you were studying, what it was like being abroad for you, if it helped having a sibling or not. So with that, we'll just get into it. So we'll start with you, Jean. What was your experience like applying to university?
I don't remember it very well, to be honest. But from what I remember, it was definitely the UCAS. It was called UCAS. Mm-hmm. Having to do the whole, like, why are you choosing this uni for your uni? And you know, that whole shebang.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would say it was a pretty straightforward process of applying to universities. Although there were a lot of options.
Yeah,
I would say it was made pretty easy by, like, the school.
That was going to be my next question. Did you apply with school or did you go to UNISERV? So you answered that.
Yeah, because I applied to Canada. So for Canada, I applied to UNISERV, and then for the UK, I applied with the school.
Oh, okay. And when it came to sort of narrowing down your uni options, did the school help you, or was it up to you and Google to figure it out?
I think it was just the grades I knew I could.
Fair
enough. I could make, so that was narrowed down. That narrowed things down.
I know.
Yeah.
I think all of us,
it was
was literally what we were like, hey, but these grades, the way they're looking.
Where will they take me?
Yeah.
Wombe, what about you? What was your experience like?
I mean, for me, UNISERV was very major. We didn't have as good of, I guess, a route to applying. I also went to the UK. We didn't have as good of an applying route through school. So UNISERV played a major part in helping me do my application, the UCAS process, the personal statement, and all of that. I think for me, in terms of finding my uni, I hadn't heard of it before I was choosing to apply to it. I went to one of the university fairs that used to be at Sarit Center. I'm not sure if they're still there anymore. And as I was going to the stand for, it was either like Leeds or Kiel, where I knew a lot of people went to and enjoyed. I saw my uni event was an empty booth and all the others were full. So I went up to the lady there, saw a picture of the uni, fell in love instantly and decided that's where I wanted to go. So that's how my choice was made. Obviously, I had a lot of like security unis just in case I didn't meet my grades. But in terms of the actual application, it was purely UNICEF.
And what was it like? What was it about the university that made you fall in love? I think there's, you're the first person I've ever heard say that. You went to the stand because it was empty. And then you decided, hey, my love, this is the one for me.
Honestly, it was the picture that was on the like roll-up banner that they put. It was extremely green and looked just really pretty. And then the lady I spoke to, who ended up being my boss when I was in uni, was really nice, really passionate about the school. She was doing her MBA and had worked at the uni for a while before. And just the way she spoke about it and how excited she was about it. And I like passionate people like that. Those are the things that draw me. And so I was like, if somebody can be so excited about a place that not only have they gone to school there, they've chosen to stay to work even after that, I think it was obvious that it would have been a really good choice. So when I looked into it a bit more, I knew that it was a good choice. And it was. I wasn't wrong. I wasn't disappointed.
I was going to ask. That was my follow-up. And so I think just for people listening, you went to Loughborough University. And you studied banking and finance. So was that, did you look into the course before sort of, because I think Adoni did this. She looked at the courses and then she was like, which university offers the best for my course particularly? Mm-hmm. Was that something that you did because your sister did that? Or were you just like university first and then the course comes second?
I was definitely university first because I didn't know what I wanted to do course-wise. I didn't know what I enjoyed. I knew I was good at math, I was good at business, so it was likely I was going to do a business degree, which is generally offered everywhere. And so it was university first, and then obviously things about the university did draw me. It wasn't just purely the aesthetics of it. Decently highly ranked in the UK, really good sports university, and I love playing sport like for fun, and really good students union and like student experience. Even the rankings in the UK are really high, so all those things sort of drew me in, and then the course was sort of an afterthought, if you will.
Was Loughborough where you had wanted to do like psychology and you're gonna be like a test, if you want to share that story?
Yes, so I actually wanted to do business psychology as a degree, but the year I was joining in 2016 was the very first year they were offering the course, so I've been part of the first cohort to do it, and my folks were just like, absolutely not. So that sort of changed my mind, because I had done psychology as well in A level, so business psychology made sense, and so I ended up with a finance degree because that's basically math and business.
And what about you, Jean? What was it like picking, well, I guess you've already answered that question, but was it, in hindsight, did you rethink the university that you chose moving forward? Or did you feel like, actually, this was a really great choice, the way that things happened?
I definitely liked Swansea. I definitely didn't see myself at Swansea. Mm-hmm. That's a story for another day. Yeah, Swansea was nice, and like it's a nice student city, amazing people, and yeah, for me, I liked it. It was by the beach. It was a beautiful city.
Oh, lovely, by the beach.
Yeah.
What course did you do?
Business management.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cynthia, you're the odd woman.
But it's still in keeping with, you know, the traditional African thing. Someone has done a science, everybody else has done business
management. True.
<Yeah. laughs> Gotta look after the money.
True.
It sounds like for both of you guys, like what your university looked like was really important, what it offered other than the course. And I think the reason why we're doing this episode, Meet Our Siblings, so like, obviously you have older siblings who went to university. Both of us went to the UK. And I think for Gathoni as well, the university and what it was like was really important for you too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted, first of all, it's so interesting. One of my top choices was Chester. And one of my cousins told me that Chester was like the outskirts of Manchester. Mm. And I already live in Kikuyu, which is outskirts of Nairobi. So I was like, I don't want to go to, I'm not like leaving the country to go to Shags there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting for me that that's how my decision to change universities was important. But then I also wanted a university that offered a placement for free. Mm. And that's what I found at Salford. Yeah.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice.
Because I think I would say for me and myself, when it came to picking my university, I think it was similar mm-hmm. to Wanboy's story where it was about aesthetics. So for me personally, I don't mm-hmm. actually remember meeting Kings at a fair or anything like that, but it was just like the website. I was like, damn, this website's smashing. You can mm-hmm. get it. And I was like, wow, let's do this. And then it didn't hurt that it was like a top ranked university, but I think right. I wish I had thought about sort of like its environs, because I didn't really consider the fact that, you know, it's a, like, I think for you guys, I think most people went to like universities that like had campuses, whereas like for me, it was more like it was a university in a city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't really mm-hmm. have that student support going on. And I didn't really have, like, for example, when I went down to visit Jean over the summer holidays, it was very clear, like, Swansea was made up of its students, because otherwise it was just dead if you were there.
Empty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Loughborough is exactly the same.
Yeah, and it's a nice feeling, because even now when I live in Sheffield, it's like, it's really nice. It's just filled with students and it keeps like a city vibrant and young. Whereas before, like London, it's just, it's nice, but like mm-hmm. if you're just broke all the time. So would not recommend 0 to 10.
Yeah.
But just going back to the premise of this podcast, did having older siblings who'd gone to university before you had gone to the UK, how did that influence your decisions? Because did you guys think like, oh, I want to apply somewhere else? I definitely want to avoid where they've gone, or am I more willing to go where they're, you know, closer to where they are, for example? Women first, one more.
For me, I actually wanted to stay here for university. I wanted to stay at home for uni. But that was with the opportunity, and I'm so glad that my parents let me know that having the opportunity to go elsewhere is something I shouldn't pass down. I definitely think I would have regretted it had I stayed home and not had the experience of those 4 years away. Yeah, I think the fact that my sister had gone to the UK was a consideration, but I genuinely wasn't considering anywhere else anyway except Nairobi for university. Mm-hmm. So it helped, and I knew exactly the steps I needed to go through to apply, because Gathani had gone through it. And I had that extra bit of information and knew that she was having a good experience for those 2 years she was there before me. But yeah. I guess it was a mix of, yes, it helps that she was there, but I don't think if she hadn't gone to the UK, I don't think I would have gone anywhere else anyway.
Interesting. What about you, Jean?
I think it was helpful that Cynthia had gone through the process of like going to the UK and obviously talking to her when she's there. You're like, wow, you know, it seems amazing to have all this independence and like this new life and all that. Yeah, so I definitely, for me, I definitely knew I wanted to go abroad. And yeah, I took the opportunity to go abroad as well. That makes sense, yeah.
Nice. Jean, did you always know you wanted to go abroad because, like, we were in a British system, or do you think, like, say if you were doing 844 and had gone like up to form 4, would you have wanted to go abroad still?
I don't know. I feel like with going to international schools, it's very implied that you, like, this is the path that you should
mm-hmm.
take.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's like in 844. Yeah, so I definitely think, even if I was in 844 and it was like a good 844 school, I think going abroad would make the most sense for a lot of people.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think it was the same for me. I always knew I wanted to go abroad, but I think it's because I was in British system. So it was like implied that sort of that's the route you're going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think many people, I don't think there was anyone actually who ever said that they wanted to study in Nairobi, in Hillcrest. I don't think I think it was mostly just like, oh, this is like a backup option, but like this isn't like something that's the first thing on my mind, if that makes sense. Like I think, yeah, it was just always just implied this is where, because even in terms of like Hillcrest, for example, you didn't really get any other option than the UK. And I think Dennis has mentioned it before, all you got was like advice to go to the UK. If you wanted to go to Canada, Australia, US, that was like, you do that in your own time. Whereas I'm sure like maybe for you guys, because you went to UNICEF, that was more of like an option of you could go other places in the world. But I think it's also interesting, maybe one day we can have UNICEF and just ask, or maybe like it would just be nice for UNICEF to offer people the support to go to like a local university as well. Because I think UNICEF, it serves universities, but only serves universities outside of Kenya. And I feel like a lot of people might have benefited. For example, if like I had known that, I don't know, if there was like a course or something that was only offered in Kenya or something that would directly allow me to, you know, gain like a placement in like, you know, the Kenyan sphere, career-wise, you know, automatically at the university, maybe I would be more prone to working in Kenya, for example. But I think it's because like the emphasis was so heavy already to just go directly to the UK from the get-go that it doesn't come as a thought to study in Nairobi. And also our older sibling as well, Butsi, he studied in Nairobi. He's a pilot, but then afterwards he went to South Africa. So I think that gateway for us was already in our minds, and our dad worked in the UN as well. So it was just something that, yeah, we definitely want to go abroad. And I think when Gene was younger, let me just expose him. When Gene was younger, he was always like obsessed with America. He was like, oh, I want to go and live in America. And I think he still has that dream as well. So, yeah. So, yeah, I guess answering for the both of us, I think that's why, we just automatically just thought abroad. Yeah. But, Mamboy, why, for you, why did you, even though you had Godoni who was abroad, why did you still want to study in Nairobi?
I think I just wanted to be near comfort. I love home. I've always known I want to live at home. I've always known I want to pursue a career and a life at home. And so I didn't feel like I necessarily wanted those 4 years away, even though I knew eventually I'd want to come back home. But I am so grateful that I had people wiser than me encourage me to go away for those 4 years. And I've ended up back home anyway at the end of the day. And I think with opportunities that, and obviously I can't like write or predict what would have happened, but I think the opportunities that I've been able to get because I did my degree abroad may not have happened had I stayed for university here. Which is unfortunate, but it is the way things are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's another episode.
That's true.
So what was you guys' experience like at uni in terms of like finding a community, settling in, finding like part-time jobs or occupying yourself outside of just academics? What was the experience like? What was the transition like? Whoever speaks up first.
Gene, you
want to go ahead?
Okay. I think for me, it was really good. And I recognize that I was very lucky from day one, from my accommodation that I happened to be placed into in first year, I met my friends for life. The same people I lived with in first year, I lived with for the rest of my 3 years at uni. We moved out of campus into town into a 6-bedroom house, same girls from first year. One of those girls has even come to Nairobi to see me. So I was, I think, very lucky from day one. I found my community very quickly. And it also helped getting involved with things at school. So in playing sport for fun, I was able to meet a lot of new friends. In getting a job in the international office, so getting access to all the other Kenyans and East Africans on campus, I was able to meet so many more people, all of whom I've still sort of maintained contact with. Now this is 3 years after graduating. So I was able to find my community quite quickly. And I will say, I think a campus uni helped with that. Being at a university where everybody is on campus, everybody lives on campus, and everybody's doing things on campus, made people a lot more accessible, because people aren't going 30 minutes, 40 minutes away to go back to where they live. Everybody was a 10-minute walk away, which made things really easy. Yeah, I think I was lucky. I'm not sure if my experience is very common for a lot of people. And I will say that hearing Gabani's experience as well did frighten me, because she wasn't as lucky when she first went to uni. So that's, I think, also another thing that made me very grateful for the experience in the community I was able to build quite quickly.
Yeah, I was so happy Wamboi just went in and settled just so easily and so quickly. I'm like, thank God.
For me, it definitely wasn't as easy as or as smooth as Wamboi is, for sure. Yeah, like, it's very different, like, living with the random people that you don't really, you know, you've never met before, definitely. Sort of sharing a kitchen. In the house I lived with, we were like 8 people, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, and sharing, like, 2 bathrooms. So it was very different to, like, coming from home and being home and all of that. I'm also very introverted, so, like, socializing, and British people are so polite, and it's it's like, it's hard to get used to someone being so nice to you. Like, what does this person want to like? But yeah, like, eventually there's also a lot of Kenyans that I met in the UK, a lot of East Africans, like Ugandans, Tanzanians. So yeah, that made it a bit easier after a while. But yeah, I guess it's just about getting out of my comfort zone and sort of putting yourself out there.
Yeah, I think I would say that my experience is very similar to Gathoni's and Jean's. Like, hearing my boy's story, I think I still know very few people who are like that. Like, it takes them a really long time to acclimatize and, you know, find a community. I think even if you're really extroverted, even if you already know people abroad, I think it's just sort of like the shock of, you know, there's that anticipation of, like, freedom, like Jean said, and you want to be away from your parents, nini, and then you're like, hey, by the way, it's real. It's gold. Everything is so expensive, and just having to settle in and stuff, and it can be really hard. But I think eventually when you do find some people, it can be nice. But I think I'm still yet to find what Wamboi has had. And, like, I think it was, she was very, very lucky. But for the both of you guys, do you think that having your older siblings was helpful in the UK, or did we just leave you guys out in the cold? Simon Quedley.
Honest answer for me, I think it was all up to me. Because when I went for first year, Gathoni was in Nairobi. She was doing her placement here in Nairobi. So she technically wasn't even in the UK when I was there for my first year. So it didn't really make a difference for me.
And I think for me, I really wanted to have my placement in the UK so that just in case anything happened, like, I'd be there in case somebody needed me. But obviously you make plans and God loves. So we found ourselves on different sides of the world. But again, just hearing her experience and how she settled down just made me feel a lot better about the fact that, you know, I ended up doing my placement in Kenya.
What was it like for you to make a difference? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's the same question. Like, I acclimatized all right, you know, after a while. But yeah, the culture shock is definitely there, like, immediately. And yeah, it was It was nice having Cynthia there for sure. Mm-hmm. Even though, because she's the one who actually met me at the airport and everything.
Oh, cute.
In Heathrow, and yeah, it was definitely nice to see a familiar face.
Yeah, I think I remember. Nice. I remember that day really well. It was it was weird because like we have an uncle in the UK and he still lives here now, but I didn't see him as often because even though he lives in Reading, I lived in London. Obviously, like he's working, he's got a family. I'm a student and stuff like that. But like having a younger sibling, I know this is about Jean. Let me just tell you my story. But having like a younger sibling and like seeing Jean at the airport, like that still makes me very emotional because it was so nice to have like a proper familiar face and like to just be like, oh, I've got someone in this country, you know, like even though he was down in Wales and I was in England, it was just so nice. And it sort of brought me a lot of comfort to know that like there's someone I can look out for and there's a way that I can be of help in any way I possibly can.
Right.
And it was just nice to have like your best friend in the same country as you, you know? And it's a shame, like it is a big regret of mine. I wish I went down to Swansea more often. But when Jean came up, I think I was in my final year or something like that. Yeah, because he's 2 years below me.
Yeah, third year.
So it was quite a hectic year, but I wish I'd gone down more often because when I did, it was amazing. But he came up a lot, which was really nice. But yeah, it was fun. Yeah, it was. I feel like it genuinely just changed my entire experience of the UK, and it just made it so lit. It was nice.
That's good. Yeah, when I eventually went back for final year and Ombwe was there, I think that was the best year literally of my life in uni, of my uni life.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm going to like your life.
It was. No, of my uni life, babe.
Yeah, uni makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, uni life. We traveled. I went to see her. She came to see me. And I remember before we both left from home, like my mom taught us to make chapati and mandazi. And by the time we got to the UK and was settled in, I remembered how to make the chapatis. She remembered how to make the mandazi. So anytime we'd go visit each other, we'd, you know, make and share. It was good fun.
Nice.
Yeah. And so on that same note, were there expectations that you guys had of having an older sibling in the UK? That you feel like we could have done better.
Yeah, you could have sent me more money, bro.
I never spared it.
You did a good job. You definitely helped me with my budget more than once.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I think no, I would say I didn't really have expectations on my end. I think other than sort of learning from your experience, like speaking of money, I was able to get a job within a month of being in the UK because I saw the process Gathoni had to go through once she arrived and how long that took her. So I was very focused on that from the day I arrived. I was applying for my national insurance number and doing things because I knew I wanted a job because I knew I wanted to live a great life over my 4 years and I needed a job to be able to do that. But yeah, I think it was helpful sort of seeing what you went through to be able to do better. Know better, so do better.
What about you, Jean? What was your experience like looking for a job?
Well, I when I was like in uni, like just casual jobs. So like I did a lot of bartending jobs, worked at festivals and stuff. So that was fun. Yeah, afterwards, obviously trying to get a job now is much easier.
Yeah.
But when I was there, like, this whole sponsorship thing and, yeah, the process was crazy.
Yeah, it was.
And very competitive. Very competitive, yeah, 100%. It changed immediately after I graduated, which, like, sucked because...
Yeah. If only you had known.
Yeah.
What about getting that first, like, part-time or student job? Was it easy for you? Did you have to go through like many job applications before you got it?
No, because I was in Swansea. So like in Swansea, obviously it's a student city. So like I think the first job I got was around December. And there weren't a lot, I was lucky, there weren't a lot of students and I didn't come home for Christmas. So it was pretty easy to like get a gig, and then I managed to keep the job even after the holidays.
Oh, nice. That's good.
But yeah, it was pretty all right. I think I saw it on Facebook or something and I just messaged the person.
Wow.
Yeah, I would say Jean was pretty. You were pretty good at applying for jobs because you also applied for you worked for that phone company. What was it called? The mobile app Circle.
Yeah, I worked for it's a fintech.
Yeah.
It was a startup back then. I don't know if it exists anymore, but I was a student ambassador for them at Swansea.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
I think Jean was really good at basically hitting the ground running because he joined a little bit later Swansea, story for another day. But he hit the ground running with like just getting a job, getting settled. I think it took me by surprise as well because I thought he was going to struggle a little bit because I definitely struggled to get acclimatized. But like it took me by surprise how quickly like he just was like, oh, I've got this job. Oh, I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And like, I think I literally saw Jean like grow up in front of my eyes. I was like, this is wild.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think it's what Wambui is talking about, seeing us go through the struggles, sort of they learned what to do, what not to do.
Yeah.
Because even me getting a job, it took me a year to get a job.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think I got my first job maybe towards the end of first year, beginning of second year.
And what were the obstacles that were in your way?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't actually know what it was. I told myself, and up to now I strongly believe, but I don't know for a fact. I believe it was my name. I think people saw my name and they decided they don't know how to say it. And then, you know, if they ask for LinkedIn, they've seen, hey, this girl is coming from Africa, and then she has a hard name. So I don't know if it's a fact, but yeah. I believe up to now I strongly believe that was one of the issues, because how I actually ended up getting my first job is that I applied for those jobs that take everyone and that needed many people. Mm-hmm. So it was a company called At Your Service where they needed like waitresses and waiters and bar staff for different events, and they literally just needed people.
Okay.
So that was the first job I got, and so that's what sort of convinced me that people saw my hard name and were like, we don't even want to start. Because, and it made sense to me at the time, because even my housemates at the time, they met me the first day. They were like, oh, hi, what's your name? I was like, Adoni. They're like, give us a nickname. So they didn't even try. Yeah, they didn't even try to say it. They just asked for a nickname immediately. So I'm like, so maybe that's what the people at the workplace were thinking as well.
What's that about Adoni?
You told me.
I know. So from first year up to, the third year, everyone called me G. And then in final year, I said, by the way, if you're not going to learn how to say my name, then
keep it out of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, we don't need to engage. Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild because, anyways, people would say all sorts of like Russian names, all sorts of Eastern European names, but Gadoni,
an African name. I know.
Just yesterday at work, I had someone, one of my consultants, called me a black girl's name because I was black, and I was like, "You just spoke to me. My name is Cynthia." I was like, oh, I got you, and I was like, it's like I've had a long day. Anyways, and he was like, "Oh, sorry." I was like,
oh gosh,
better be. Back to the topic at hand. So what was the moment that you guys would say in university that sort of changed the way you looked at your future career? Was it something that, did you guys always want to be in, did you always want to study business management? Did you always want to do, and obviously you've talked about doing banking and finance, but during university, was there a moment, even as you're doing your part-time jobs? I think that's a moment, particularly in Kenya, because people don't do part-time jobs. people here work from the age of 16. Was there a moment where you were just like, this is definitely what I want to do? Jean, you can go first.
I don't like, because the degree that I did was very broad. Business management obviously is like wide encompassing so many like aspects of business.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I ever thought about what I would want to refine it in. When I was applying for jobs, like a lot of like graduates, you just apply for graduate trainee positions, which are supposed to help you obviously narrow down what kind of path you want to go into. Yeah, but for me, I would say when I was applying, it was mostly like the law ones, like litigation or something like that. I've always been interested in that kind of stuff. Like while doing my A levels, I did law, so like yeah, business law would have been interesting, and sort of that like pathway would have been dope. Also, business analytics or something like that. But yeah, I wouldn't say there was a specific moment in uni that changed the way I looked at my career path. I didn't get the chance to get into a graduate trainee position or anything like that when I was there. Yeah.
And then on my end, I would say I figured out very quickly that I can't see myself doing finance or traditional finance as a career. That was a realization I had within my first semester, I think. So I enjoy math, I enjoy business, but the idea of working numbers every single day, not for me. And so with that, it was still a point of confusion because I'm like, I know what I don't want to do, but I still didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I did a placement in my third year in supply chain. And I lived down in Bristol and worked for a big company, but I worked in the national distribution center. So it was a much smaller team. That's one of the first places that I realized I would like to work for a smaller firm or with a smaller team. And I loved the supply chain and operations aspect of the work I did. The fact that it was very fast paced, days were different. That's something that really caught my eye. And I think I've been lucky enough to end up in, it's not an operations or supply chain, but I've been lucky enough to end up in work that every day is not exactly the same. And also lucky enough to end up in a small team. So yeah, definitely realized I don't do traditional finance. I have an interest in operations and supply chain. And even though that's not what I've pursued, and I have the opportunity to look at very many different sectors and areas of sort of management and strategy right now. I think knowing what you don't want to do was just as important for me as knowing what I wanted to do.
And as both of you guys, you know, studied within like the business finance sort of like sector, did you guys ever foresee yourselves? I think the big thing, the reason why a lot of people go into like business is because it's so broad and so varied, even finance and banking and just that entire sector. A lot of people think that they want to go back home to Kenya. And basically, obviously, because in Kenya, it's so easy to set up a business. It's so easy to get into that sector. I think in comparison to most other sectors that having to do extra legwork.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something that was at the top of both of your minds? You're like, I definitely want to, you know, study with the hopes of going back to Kenya at some point, if not immediately. And is that still something that stands in your mind at the moment?
Sorry, I missed the question because of the internet connection.
So my question was, because you both study within like the business finance sector, a sector that's, I would say, mm-hmm. easier to get into in Kenya in terms of like you can be self-employed. There's lots of, you know, I think
mm-hmm.
in terms of Kenya, it is quite easier in comparison to other careers. Was that something in the back of mm-hmm. your mind that you do at one point want to go back to Kenya and work there, even if it wasn't immediately? And like, how does that, in comparison to then, what has it been like working in Nairobi now for the both of you? Wambui, you can go first.
I think I said this earlier, I've always known I want to live at home and I want to pursue a career here. And so regardless of what I chose to do, that would have been a thought in my mind, that eventually I did want to come back home. And I think, again, even in coming home, I was able to find employment within about 3 months of being back home with a firm that does, that's involved in strategy and consulting work across several different sectors. And so again, it's not directly linked to finance. I haven't had to do anything directly linked to finance in my career thus far, and that is hopefully the trajectory I continue to. There are bits and pieces where my finance or that sort of business degree comes into play in a lot of ways, but yeah, I haven't had to utilize the degree exactly as it is being here in Nairobi.
For me, I would say I definitely didn't think I would, like, my aim was definitely to stay in the UK. So I applied for a lot of jobs, but obviously finding a job was pretty hard. Yeah, the aim was definitely to do a master's after, and COVID happened. I mean, it just, everything just sort of stagnated after COVID for me. But yeah, I definitely, my plan was definitely to work and live abroad.
Is that still something, sorry, I'm hosting now. Is that still something you're looking towards?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's definitely still the plan for me. Come hell or high water, you know, that's definitely still something I want to pursue and something I want to live out, you know. I don't regret not Not like seeing if that could happen, you know.
And would you say that the past, because you've been working in Nairobi since 2019, for the family business, would you say that that's something that's definitely shaped the way you just perceive life, you perceive sort of like your passions, just moving forwards? Do you think that it's something that has shaped you in a positive way?
Asking the tough questions. yeah, for sure. Like, the experience I've had over these last almost 4 years now has definitely, they've definitely been positive, and like have molded me. It's definitely an experience that would definitely help me a lot. In like, if I was to decide to go into a career. It's an invaluable experience that I don't think I could have picked up anywhere else, being in like the business environment of Kenya. And yeah, I hope that answers your question.
It does. And since you guys both live in Nairobi, obviously, I think most people, I want to say like 90% of people still live with their families. And still with their parents. What has that been like for the both of you who were really independent, you know, during university? Has that been something, I think especially it would be interesting to hear it from both your perspective, because, you know, you're a guy, you're a girl. What has that been both for, like, with you guys, in terms of just thinking about advice to people who are like, you know, thinking about the transition from living on your own? Because even me, I can't imagine living by myself for the many years and then coming back home and, you know, living with your parents. Because I think, obviously, I know you guys very personally, you're my sibling, you're my good family friend. You both have the luxury of having pretty chill parents in that sense, but like, still, what was that transition like for you guys, and what are tips you could give to other people who are thinking of moving back home or don't have a choice?
This is a hard-hitting question. I need to be very careful about what I say if I want a roof over my head. I'll say it was an adjustment. It was a very big adjustment. As you said, having that independence to be able to say, I'll wash my dishes at this point, I'll wash my clothes at this point, I'll leave the house and come home at this point. Because at the end of the day, when you are under somebody else's roof, as much as this is my home, I'm under somebody else's roof, and their rules and the way they want to run the household are what I have to follow. And just out of respect, and the same thing, if anybody came to a place where I lived when I lived on my own, there is a way that I liked to live that I would want them to follow suit with. So definitely an adjustment. It took time to get to the point where all of us were comfortable just being grown-ups in the same household. But now I can say almost 3 years later, we're at a good place.
Awesome. For me, it was an adjustment as well. I wouldn't say like a huge adjustment. Honestly, I don't really remember it that well.
Oh, it must be nice. Yeah, I remember it very clearly.
Yeah, I'll say the biggest thing was like someone else is obviously you're financially dependent on someone else. Mm-hmm. At least maybe the first couple of months if you're lucky, a year, you know, if you're not so lucky, you have to be asking this person your guardian, your parent for chums, you know, and asking where your chums are going. So yeah, that's definitely the biggest adjustment.
And so what are some tips that you guys would give the people who are considering, you know, moving back home, or they have to and it's imminent? What's some advice you'd give them?
Save your money.
100%. I completely agree with that.
That's very good advice.
Do everything you can do to not be 100% financially dependent if you don't have to be.
Umbi, what about you? What's your one tip?
Me, worked through having saved money through working in the UK. So when I moved home, but yeah, I would say, that to do everything you can to not be 100% financially dependent. Obviously, living under somebody's roof, eating food, and doing all that, those are all ways in which you are dependent. But if you're able to save enough, as Gina said, to cater to your social life, do that. And just be patient as well. Like, everybody's trying their best, even your parents, as much as you may be annoyed at them, they're trying their best. And yeah, be as communicative as possible if you have the room to be able to do that. You're grown, it's okay. What's the worst that can happen is how I like to live my life, which maybe is bad advice, I don't know.
That's true. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that's good advice. So take it with a pinch of salt. And so I think this is, and I think just for my following question, did you guys experience imposter syndrome when you moved to the UK, and what was that like, and also moving back to Kenya? Because the first thing is that obviously you're a Kenyan who's moved to the UK, and then it's like finding yourself. But then it's also you've been a Kenyan who's had a British background in high school and in university. You've probably picked up like an accent up with Heathrow, and then you've come back into the Nairobi scene. So was there like, did you have an imposter syndrome? One, and two, what was that like moving to the UK and then moving back to Nairobi? Jean, you can go first.
For the like imposter syndrome, as in being an imposter in Kenya, or feeling an imposter in Kenya, feeling like an imposter in the UK?
Both. So like, did you feel like an imposter when you moved to the UK, and then also did you feel like an imposter moving back to Nairobi and then trying to acclimatize? Because you've obviously left, you've gotten this, you know, extra bit of education, you've lived in certain, you know, spheres and stuff, and then moving back to Nairobi. I think especially for us, because we live in Tigoni, we live in, you know, we work in Limuru, and then similarly one boy who lives in Kikuyu as well.
I would say in the UK I didn't feel like in the UK I feel like maybe I stuck out, or maybe I thought everyone was I didn't feel like everyone was looking at me. Like, I was very conscious of like everyone and everything. I wouldn't say I felt like an imposter, but I definitely felt like I stuck out a bit compared to everyone else. Especially, I don't know if in your unis, like, they used to sing these songs on the bus. I don't know. Like, for us, it was like when you like Cardiff was our rival, so like it was like, you know, those like we hate Cardiff, hate something. Uh-huh. Or, mm-hmm. You know, so for me the first time I heard, I was like, what the, you know, what is going on? You know? So it was definitely just the culture shock and like learning how to sort of get that British side of you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then obviously coming to Kenya and then readjusting again, acclimatizing to, you know, and adjusting your accent kidogo.
Yeah.
I think I would agree 100%. Like, it is different being the only black person in a lot of rooms, and then even if there are other black people in rooms, being the only African in a room. So there were definitely adjustments here and there. But again, I think the way I was able to build my community, really open-minded people who wanted to get to know me as a person and not because I am the one that's standing out or the one that's different. I made sure to intentionally build a community of Kenyans and East Africans as well. And so I didn't feel like an imposter. I would say there was definitely some adjustment, a lot of culture shock and a lot of things to get used to in that regard, but it wasn't too big of a deal. And then moving back home, same thing. Like, I know I'm Kenyan. Kenyan runs in my blood 100%. It doesn't matter where I go, where I've been, this will always be home and I will always move and act accordingly. So I didn't even feel like there was readjusting that needed to happen when I came back home. I guess the readjusting I would say that needed to happen would be through something like income. In my part-time job, I was earning more in a week than I was earning in an internship here. You know what I mean? But that's just the way things work here. And that's just the way the economy is. And I knew that coming back home and being able to work my way up through things like that. So I think, yeah, the only adjustment was in the way I viewed maybe money and income. Because again, I had my first job being out there. So coming to my first job here was a bit of a difference.
Right. And what about yourself, Kadone? Because you've also moved back to, you've been in Nairobi for some time. You're about to leave us, but
I know. Been back since 2020 as well because of COVID. For me, I don't think it was really imposter syndrome, but there was definitely culture shock. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, in first year my accommodation, we lived 11 of us.
Wow.
I was the only black person. So you can imagine, already. And I already said the story of how they couldn't even be bothered to try and pronounce my name. So there's that. And then I think all international black students joined the ACS, a group society in their uni. So I joined the ACS and I got to meet different Africans who are in my year. But I don't know if you guys experienced this. A lot of them were Nigerians, and I feel like there was some sort of competition of how African you can be. So I also felt I didn't really fit in here so much. So I just took a step back, and then I found my one friend, and I was like, I'm golden. I'm good. She was mixed race from the UK. Half British, half Jamaican. Shout out to you, Jade. We found each other and we were friends all the way through uni, and now we're still friends as well. And then coming back, when I came back home the first time on holiday, I had a bit of culture shock when I was catching my connecting flight in Dubai, because I didn't realize that I had been so used to seeing white people. So when I went to board my flight for Kenya, and it was a room full of black people, I was feeling a bit intimidated.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't realize that I had seen so many white people for so long that it would have affected me. But then after that, I think I was a bit conscious about it, and I wasn't affected. I didn't face so much culture shock after that.
And what was it like moving?
Yeah, and then back? Coming back home.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like moving back now to Nairobi in 2020? Because obviously for you, it wasn't even a choice. It was like COVID's happened. You can't stay in New York. You need to come back.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing, my program was over, so I was going to come back home anyways. But moving back home, there was definitely a bit of an adjustment period because I was on a high of being in New York. Mm. And then because I was doing my master's at the same time, I came back and I still needed to finish my dissertation. So it just came and I was so the high from coming back and then the high from needing to do my dissertation and finishing. Then once you're done and everything is settled, there's nothing you need to do. You're like, oh, this is life now.
Mm.
So it was a bit of, you know, adjustment. I'd say staying up late, sleeping all day, you know, went through that cycle. But after a while, you figure it out, you get out of it. Yeah.
True. Yeah, I think I'm finding it funny that you got so used to seeing white people that you were like, eh?
Yeah, I was so shocked. I didn't think something like that would shock me. And you don't realize. You think, yeah, international student, like, of course, yeah, you're like, of course I'll see Mzungus, but then you don't think it will affect you.
And do you think having a community around you was helpful when you were back home, you know, going through that? And were there other people who had also moved back during that time or slightly before you who had been helpful?
It did help definitely having a community around. I spent a lot of time with my cousins, which was a good thing. I met one of my cousins, Ivy, at the airport. We both were pulled off our respective countries because of COVID. So even going through quarantine together, different places, but going through that with somebody I knew made life easier. It definitely did help having people around just to talk to, and then the fact that, you know, there's pressure to find something, but then also the understanding that things are not really happening at the moment sort of made me feel a bit calm in the process to look for a job was taking longer than I hoped it would.
And so if you guys would have a piece of advice for everyone, I know you've said saving money. What's another piece of advice that you'd have for other people who are thinking about or are coming back home and trying to settle down? Or already back home and are just trying to find just a place for them?
Mm. I would say, especially if you've decided that or it's inevitable that you have to come back home, I would say just accept that choice and then try and make the most of your time when you're back home. Because you're in a case where you're here, but you're still like eyeing life out there when it's not a real, real possibility. I'd say come enjoy life here and the opportunities to go abroad will always come up, but in the moment just try and appreciate like what you have. I'll say that. You guys,
are you waiting for a response
from
both of us?
I
think similar. I didn't have anything else other than what I said: be patient, take it a day at a time, save as much as you can, and don't let your sort of goals and dreams die just because you're home today. That doesn't need to be, I guess, the end of your story or the end of whatever you're aspiring to, whether it is here or elsewhere.
I agree.
I think for the brief 6 months I was home during 2020 because of COVID, I think what helped me sort of acclimatized being back home was definitely just spending as much time as I could with my family. I think once I realized like this is such an opportunity, like I get to be 6 months at home, and that's not something that I was ever, you know, at the back of my mind that was going to be an opportunity, because I'd not been home at this point. I had been maybe 6 years abroad, and I was only coming home once a year, and so this was really nice to just be at home. I had a baby brother at some point, I still have a baby brother, but it was just nice to be able to spend so much time with him, and that's precious time that we still have good memories, core memories of together. And I think just building a routine for myself as well, and just finding your own place. So like for me, it was just like the gym. That was like the 6 months that I really just tried to just work out as much as I could, obviously with a healthy mindset, but just trying to create some sort of routine for myself. And just, I think it's the same experience that I had in London, was basically you just have to forcefully craft out space for yourself, whether it's like, you know, you have a regular coffee place that you go to or a regular park that you go to. Things don't have to be you're spending money all the time, but it's just like you have to forcefully sometimes create room for yourself. And I think that's, that tends to be more of like a mental obstacle than it is a physical one. But I think that's also always been helpful for me every time I've moved country. And I think it can, I think the reason why I focus so much on this question is because people can automatically be like, oh, but I'm moving back home. It's obvious I'm going to feel at home. But I think when you've been living abroad for quite a bit of time and you come back, places always change, people always change around you. And I think it can take people as a, it can come as a surprise, I think as a rude awakening that like, no, it's not as easy as you think it was going to be.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I hope this is probably advice that I will have to listen to at some point in the future for myself. Yeah.
All right. So Jean and Omboy, where do you see yourselves in the next, let's say, 5 years?
5 years will be 30. Damn. hopefully chasing my dreams. Hopefully not having given up on my dreams. Yeah, hopefully more settled down and more grounded. Yeah, and definitely just a happy, happy person. Yeah. What about you, Omboy?
I like your answer so much, because same, like, happy in all aspects of my life, doing well physically, mentally, emotionally, continuing to thrive and find fulfillment in my work, in my career, in my friendships, in my relationships, and just, yeah, ensuring I am continuing to work towards my goals, my ambitions. Yeah. 5 years feels like it's such a long way away, but I know it's not a long way away as well. It's not, so yeah. I think it's an interesting one. It's not, so yeah. Oh, what about you guys, Cynthia and Delaney? Where do you guys see yourselves in 5 years?
I was about
years?
To put Cynthia on the spot.
Nice. No, it's just really, it's just, I've just been processing that you guys are going to be 30 in 5 years. Wow.
I know. Don't say our ages, please.
Where do I see myself in 5 years? You might ask, Gadoni, I phrased this question, where do you see yourself next? Not five. Way.
I know.
Like, let me just see. Well, 5 years, I'm going to be 32. 32. Shit. I don't know, honestly. I can only hope that I will be fulfilled, happy, hopefully married, probably have like a child or something. Or not, if not another child, another dog.
Crazy. I'm excited to see another dog. Another dog.
Hopefully specializing as a GP. Yeah, I think I and hopefully seeing my family a lot more often. Yeah, I think 5 years, honestly, like, I've never been a planner. I've never been someone who's like, oh, in a year I want to be here. I think I try to take it like a day at a time, and like I think a lot of people think I plan a lot, but I don't. I think I just try to, whatever I've decided to do, I just take it seriously. It's not about a year from now, I want to do this. It's just about, I'm a bit more short term. I'm just like, this is what I've decided to do, and I'm just going to stick with it. I'm going to be disciplined. I think that's why people think I plan a lot. I don't. I just try to be as disciplined as possible. So I'm just hoping that 5 years from now, future me can look back on past me and be like, thank you. What about yourself, Gadoni?
Before I answer, in those 5 years, do you still see yourself in the UK?
Definitely. Okay. I think it's going to be quite a while until I think moving back to Kenya is going to be, it's going to be a massive decision. It's probably going to be something I think about for a very long time. because I've lived abroad for almost a decade now, and moving back as a doctor to Kenya is a very big decision, because I think a lot of people be like, oh yeah, come back to Kenya, you know, work for Aga Khan, work for Nairobi. But it's like, mm-hmm. I don't think I have it in me to charge someone 5K for like a 10-minute consultation. At that point, obviously it's going to be like 10K, but it's like, mm-hmm. for me, that just feels wrong, because now I work for mm-hmm. a social service where like everyone gets the same treatment regardless. And I think that's just going to be a really tough pill for me to swallow. Unless I come mm-hmm. home and I'm setting up my own sort of practice, or there's a way I can take that money and I turn it into a charity. But I think that just has to be a way that I'm actually helping people rather than just putting money into my own pockets. So I think, unless I decide to switch careers or something, I think it's going to be a very big decision for me. It's not that I have anything against Kenya or anything like that. It's just that I think career-wise, it would be a very big decision, and then morally as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough, that makes sense.
Yeah, good to know you're in it for the right reasons. There's some good doctors out there. That's good.
Try.
For me, 5 years. I feel like 5 years is like tomorrow, so I'm a bit unsure. But I would say, as somebody who's moving country soon.
Yeah.
I would say in the next 5 years, I would hope to have at least found some footing in my career, and be able to sort of figure out the direction that I want to go in, and hopefully this move will help out with that. Ideally, I would like to be abroad, working abroad, earning some money. If the plan, like if the future plan is to come home, I would like ideally to be able to live abroad and work abroad for a number of years before I do come back. So in those 5 years, I'm hoping that I would have settled into my career, and just enjoying life, being happy, being fulfilled. Yeah. I think I just want to take it a day at a time, as you said, without putting so much pressure on what I would want to happen. Yeah.
And hopefully another Ken's Experience podcast to see where we're all at in 5 years' time. Hopefully before that.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I'm also excited to see like where we go with the podcast, Cynthia.
Because
it's been a really fun journey. And so we will excited to see where we carry on with Dennis and Eric.
Absolutely. I think it's gonna be sweet. And so where can our podcast listeners find you guys? Only share where you're willing for people to find you, because people can find you.
I've been on social media.
Social media, LinkedIn, Twitter.
For me, you can find me on Instagram as Jean Marie.
Is that how you say your name, typically?
Yes. I would like to be called Jean Marie from now.
Noted.
But yeah, you can find me on Instagram as Jean Marie, and yeah, I don't really use LinkedIn, but it's the same Jean Marie Kamweru on LinkedIn as well.
You can find me on this podcast if you want to hear my voice. Listen to it again.
And you can find us at the Kenyans Experience.
Yes. And that's on Instagram, LinkedIn, and we have a Facebook as well, which we don't use very often. But yeah, mostly just reach us through our Instagram. And yeah, it's been really fun. Really enjoyed this series of Meet Our Siblings. Hopefully you guys get to catch up with Eric and Dennis' siblings as well. They've both got older brothers. And yeah, we've really loved having the both of you on the podcast. Thank you so much for making the time. And we look forward to seeing where you guys go with your own journeys. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and we will catch you guys on the next one. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for tuning into another episode of A Kenyan's Experience. If you found this episode inspiring or even helpful, then please do us a solid and share it with close friends or family, or even just share it to the world. We appreciate you. Hit us up. Check out that new feature, the voice notes. Let us know what you think about this episode. We'd love to hear back from you.